listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. With us today, Ron Chmielis, columnist with the Springfield Republican newspaper, and Carrie Saldo, host of WGBY's Connecting Point. Ron, Carrie, thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
This week, Springfield Police Commissioner Cheryl Claprud left the door open to bringing back officers who are facing criminal charges if they are acquitted. More than a dozen were indicted in connection with an incident at a city bar in 2015, and two others are facing federal charges in a different incident. After her swearing-in this week, Claprud said the department is bouncing back from these and other incidents.
It might end up where we recover well. I mean, you might see some of these trials come to fruition 6 months, 10 months from now, and they have favorable outcomes. And then we can say, see, and bring them back into the fold and move on.
Later in the week, a police department spokesperson said officers indicted could still face hearings possibly leading to discipline once their criminal cases conclude. Ron, even if they're cleared in court, should these officers be able to go back on the job?
Well, I think there we are in an innocent until proven guilty society. But I don't think she should say we can say see, because as we know, there's going to be questions by the public. The public doesn't have a ton of confidence in the police at the moment. They don't have a ton of confidence in the courts. So there is still something to deal with from a public relations standpoint. But I do believe that if they're acquitted, it's hard to say that innocent people shouldn't have jobs. Maybe there is some internal punishment they could get.
Carrie, can the Springfield police recover well, as we just heard Claprud say?
Well, that's going to remain to be seen, right? But you've got 470 so on the force overall. So I think some people could look at this and say, you know, some allegations against some alleged bad apples versus a larger police force.
Moving on to politics, Holyoke Mayor Alex Morse this week announced he's raised more than $200,000 since announcing in July his challenge to Springfield Congressman Richard Neal. The two will face off in the 2020 Democratic primary, and Neal's campaign manager pushed back, saying Morse was well behind his stated fundraising goal of $1 million by the end of this year. He then attacked Morse for, among other things, broken fire hydrants near a house in Holyoke that burned down recently. Morse's response to that?
Again, I think it's incredibly petty for a 30-year incumbent in Congress to talk about fire hydrants as if they're related to our announcement in our fundraising.
Carrie, Neal's campaign hasn't been shy about going after Morse. Is this a sign the congressman is taking this challenge a bit more seriously than others in the past?
I don't know if it's a bit more seriously than others in the past. He did debate Tahir Amatul Wadud after some buzz that maybe he wouldn't, but it does seem like he is coming out and not hiding on the fact that he's an incumbent here. But, you know, Morse might count his blessings here. He went after fire hydrants and not the Holyoke unemployment rate, which is 5.3%. You look at the state, it's about 3%, 2.8%.
Ron, there's been a lot of back and forth about personal tax returns, fundraising, and political records. Does there need to be more talk about the issues?
Well, that would be nice. I find it a little unsavory. Whenever candidates start bragging or arguing about who's making more money, who's raising more money, however that's done, I just don't think that's the issue that's going to hit home to the public. I think the school issues in Holyoke are fair. I don't know that the hydrant issue is fair, but I do think Neal is taking this very seriously, and he should, because candidates like Morse have been pulling upsets in American politics in the last 2 years, and this is going to be maybe more of a slugfest than we've been used to.
Carrie, we have 11 more months left in this campaign. What about that slugfest that Ron brings up? Is this what we're going to see?
Well, gone are the days of waiting for the baton to be passed or kissing the ring and, you know, being the front runner, the presumed front runner, and then taking on that chair. Morse isn't waiting. Tahir Amatul Wadud wasn't waiting. People are taking the turn when they see it, the opportunity is right for them.
Recently, the Massachusetts Cannabis Control Commission signed off on regulations allowing home delivery of marijuana. Ron, you write that the state's maybe getting a little too greedy when it comes to expanding marijuana access.
Well,
fill us in.
I don't know what's next. We're going to help light it up for them? I mean, let me say this. I was against the referendum. The referendum passed. I respect the law. Marijuana is legal, not on the federal level, but on the state level. But I don't see the need or the necessity to deliver it to people's homes. I just don't. And the idea that there's some social justice component, you have to balance out people for having the inconvenience of having to adhere to the law up until now. The law has changed. But home delivery to me seems like a cash grab beyond what I think legal marijuana should require.
Carrie, what do you think?
Well, you know, there might not be marijuana to deliver to these homes. If you look at New England Treatment Access, what's available for flower since the beginning of October has been one strain. And they told State House News that that's because there's a backlog at these state testing facilities, which there's only two of when you have about 30 legal marijuana places that are selling marijuana in the state.
Ron, that brings up another point. Should Massachusetts have maybe gotten things going in terms of cultivation, in terms of retail sales a little bit before going to home delivery?
Well, I don't think they should go to home delivery at all. But I think there's a point to that. They're going very slow with the rollout. And I see the logic in that. Maybe it's because I was against it. But you want to do it right the first time. There have been problems in other states, and they're trying to avoid that. The one thing I will say, if they do go to home delivery, I'd be okay with that personally on medical marijuana. But on recreational weed, I just don't see it. But I don't blame them for being careful with this issue, and they have been.
Carrie, should Massachusetts have maybe taken this one step at a time instead of jumping to home delivery before, you know, getting the cultivation situation, the testing situation straightened out?
I think that Massachusetts still needs to straighten out the social equity piece on this. You know, we know that people of color were disproportionately impacted by this when marijuana was illegal, being arrested or jailed at more higher rates, even though most people across all race and ethnicity used marijuana at the same rate. Social equity was supposed to help those folks own these businesses. But the feds, because it's illegal, you can't get access to this money.
As we wrap things up this week, Great Barrington, Massachusetts became the sixth community recently in the state to change Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day, according to the Berkshire Eagle. One select board member said the move is another way to push for social equity. Carrie, with both holidays being observed on Monday, do you see more towns making this switch?
You know, I think it's possible. We saw Amherst and Northampton also do this earlier, now Great Barrington. And the thing is, though, a little bit here, everything old is new again. When I was doing a little bit of reading about this, in 1977, there was an NGO conference in Switzerland where this issue was brought up. And part of the report said, quote, "From now on, children all over the world will learn the true story of American Indians on Columbus Day instead of a pack of lies about three European ships." That was in 1977 that we were talking about this.
Ron, you teach middle school history. What are your thoughts about all
of this? Well, I asked the kids, and what do you know about Columbus? The first kid said, he's a jerk. And I don't dispute that. But he wouldn't be on the list of 5,000 people to have a holiday. Now, personally, I think it's a lot of ado about not the most important issue, but I understand why it is important to some people. And I don't know that I'd push for the change, but I do understand why the change and why the need to teach this, as Carrie said, in a factual, truthful way.
All right, Ron Chmielewski with the Springfield Republican, Carrie Saldo with Connecting Point on WGBY. Thanks for coming by today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. You can also listen to us wherever you want at Apple Podcasts or by going to nepr.net/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio. Mm-hmm.